Hey, Car Talk people, the end of the year is coming up, and you know what that means, right? Well, it's time for me to get a new Buffy the Vampire Slayer calendar for the garage, but it's also time for your favorite public radio station to make sure that their finances are in whack. And as you might guess, after another really busy year for news, your station's bank account needs replenishing. So before you go out and look for the perfect can of herring for Uncle Walt, take a minute now to make a gift to your favorite day-to-day companion. That's right, your public radio station is there for you whenever you need to catch up on what's happening, whenever you need some mental stimulation, or in our case, whenever you want the rest of the lineup to seem really, really good by comparison. Support this crucial community asset with a pledge now. Just go to donate.npr.org/cartalk. That's donate.npr.org/cartalk. And sorry, we're not giving away any herring as a thank you, but we are giving away another year of great news, entertainment, and good company. Make a contribution now at donate.npr.org/cartalk, and thanks. Hello and welcome to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. We're broadcasting this week from the gift shop. Hey, buddy, watch out here, Car Talk Plaza. And we figured that around this time of year, you'd be looking for that perfect gift for your favorite mechanic.
Sure. How much is coal these days, anyway?
Well, how about something? Here's a new item. Shrug cream. For those achy shoulders, you know, after a long day of doing the mechanic shrug.
Yeah, I see over here on the shelf here, we have these knuckle pads to show that you really care. I mean, those guys walk around all day trying to fix your car, and their knuckles are all scraping on the ground.
Yes, it is. You could show you really care by, how about his one, the HSL book.
What's that?
Human as a Second Language.
So, you mean, we have these actually for sale here at Car Talk Plaza?
Well, we don't yet, but if other people call up, we'll have them for sale. And if you can think of some gifts for mechanics you think we should stock, send those ideas to us here at The Gift Shop, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our Fair City?
Ma, oh, Sonia Henny's 2238.
Speaking of mail.
We'll try to read some of these before Christmas, of course, you know, if we get any good ones.
Well, before you take a call, I was going through the files at the office. And I run across this letter from a professor.
Is that the third trash container from the left?
It is. Yeah. This is from a professor of communications. I guess I shouldn't mention his name. Maybe he's happy about this. Sure, I'll mention his name. He's from Florida.
Anyone that signs a letter
deserves what he gets.
Yeah, exactly.
You're right. Instead of saying blank. Evidently, he's been having some correspondence with our very own esteemed producer, Doug Berman. In fact, I happen to see this because there was a letter. Mr. Doug Berman, producer, Car Talk, Box 3500. Dear Mr. Berman, on October, I spoke to you regarding updating of information for the scholarly paper, get this, about Car Talk, a bona fide object of interest in popular culture study. And he attaches here a paper called Healing Our Collective Auto Angst, the Cultural Significance of Car Talk. And he goes on.
Pretty lofty title, wouldn't you say?
Huh. And he's thanking Doug for taking the time to do whatever Doug did. And I turn around.
Just probably nothing.
And I see Doug's answer. I mean, Doug, this is on Car Talk letterhead. He says, Dear Claude, thanks for sending along the scholarly paper on Car Talk. I'm impressed by the time and consideration you gave it, and by the intellectual heights to which you elevate our lousy show. I must say, however, I do find myself quite amazed to discover that there are people who have jobs at which they have nothing better to do than spend all day thinking about stuff like this.
Isn't it amazing?
And he says, wait a minute, I have a job like that. That's what he does all day. He responds to people who have nothing better to do.
Because he has what?
Nothing better to do.
Self-incrimination, the highest form of it. Anyway, if you'd like to talk to us, our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Dewey Ojazi.
Oh, jeez. No. We have to start the day with a name like this. Dewey Ojazi.
O'Shaughnessy.
O'Shaughnessy. Dewey. Is this... Is this the way to the men's room? The way. The way. Say it. Just say it one more time.
The way.
Oh.
Oh,
D-U-H?
No.
D-U-E. D-U-E.
D-E dash capital H-W-E-I.
H-W-E. The way.
Very good.
The way. O'Shaughnessy. O'Shaughnessy?
Yep.
Isn't the way like an Asian kind of name? Like,
indeed.
Like Vietnamese?
No, Chinese.
Chinese. O'Shaughnessy.
I like it.
I love it.
We won't ask any more than that.
Okay.
All right, you'll have to explain to us.
No, she's Chinese and she married some Irishman named O'Shaughnessy. It's as simple as that, no?
Yeah, that's right.
O'Shaughnessy. That must be going over big with the grand folks, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They love him.
They love him.
Is it difficult?
Well, actually, my mom's name is Yvonne, so it's not like
So it's not that far removed.
They just named us.
I was the first Italian that my in-laws ever actually saw up close. And when they met me, boy, Joanne's mother's comment was... I guess you know what you're doing, dear.
I trust you.
I trust you. Yeah. So anyway, now that we got that straightened out,
yep.
Our multicultural portion of the show. Yeah. What's up?
Oh, I called because I've got a problem with my Toyota pickup truck and its clutch, not the cylinder.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot seem to get any fluid coming out of this thing, so I can't seem to bleed it properly.
Oh, what happened? Did you lose the fluid or did you replace something?
The clutch basically just died.
Right.
You know? And I'd been warned before that the slave cylinder was leaking, so I went ahead and I replaced the slave cylinder. I rebuilt it with a little kit.
Yeah.
And then I put in a new master cylinder as well.
Oh, you did?
But I didn't prime this thing. You know, you're supposed to somehow prime it.
Bench bleed it's called.
Bench bleeding.
Bench bleed it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
You stand at the workbench, you take out a razor blade.
Well, you don't have to bench bleed it. You can bench bleed it on the vehicle, but it's just a little bit slower.
Okay.
What you're doing now is you're having an assistant pump the pedal.
Yeah, and there's just no pressure whatsoever.
And then you open the bleeder at the slave cylinder.
Right.
Okay, what you have to do if you ever want to drive this thing again is you have to bleed the master cylinder first by cracking the line open at the master cylinder. There's a little hydraulic line that goes into the clutch master, and there's a 10-millimeter fitting on it, okay, with that screws the line in. You have to open that thing.
Just loosen it a little bit.
Well, you can do one of two things. What I generally do is open the thing up and have the assistant just pump the pedal like crazy until fluid starts to squirt all over the place.
Then you tighten it up, and then you go bleed the slave.
There you go.
Oh, interesting, because I could not get anything but air to come out of there.
You couldn't get anything but air to come out of the slave.
I couldn't get anything but air to come out of the master, even.
Here's what you do. Leave the line out. Fill the reservoir up with fluid. Put your thumb over the hole and have your assistant pump the pedal. When your assistant has pumped it two or three times, tell the assistant to hold the pedal down to the floor. Take your thumb off.
Stand back.
You should hear a little psst. You should get some air. You should feel some kind of pressure. It'll be mostly air pressure. And do this several times.
Until fluid comes
Until
out.
Fluid
and fluid's got
to
come out.
And you'll notice the level in the reservoir start to drop.
Huh, so that should work, huh?
Well, here's another thing we do. We have a syringe.
Yep.
Okay, and you hook the syringe up to the bleeder on the slave cylinder.
Yep.
You fill the syringe with brake fluid. Okay, you open the bleeder, you hook the hose of the syringe up, and you force fluid backwards into the system.
Okay.
And force it to come out the reservoir.
Oh.
And by doing that, you purge, you push all the air.
You push all the air out through the top.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah, I don't know where you get these syringes.
Seems like I was fighting gravity or something.
No, we had to break into the medical supply house around the corner to get them, but we have a few at the shop, and they work great.
Hmm.
So you might be able to get one at a drugstore.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. I think the syringe thing sounds good.
Sounds good, doesn't it?
Yeah.
See ya.
Okay, thanks.
Good luck.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. This is Sean up in Montreal.
Sean.
With
as in Sean Connery?
No, the American way.
S-H-A-W-N.
That's it.
And where are you calling from?
Really?
Montreal.
Yeah, heard of it.
What are you doing there?
My wife works for a company up here.
Draft dodge.
So she, that's right, with a beard and a ponytail.
Yeah. So what's going on, Sean?
What kind of a GM car do you drive?
I have a 93 Dodge Caravan.
Hey, you know, I knew it.
But when I turn on my blower motor for the defrost, I'm getting a strange mystery sound. And it doesn't matter what speed I put the blower motor on. Mm-hmm. In the background, there is this sound here.
Nice.
I love it.
And it only occurs when I have the blower motor on the defrost or when I've engaged the air conditioner. That's it. And then every once in a while, I get one of these.
And that's your wife in the back seat.
That's right, laughing at me.
Hey, your mother-in-law.
That's right, as I beat against the dashboard.
Wait, in other words, if you turn on the blower and you just have heat coming out of the floor vents.
Either heat or no heat, if I'm using it just to blow cool air in from the outside.
Yeah, it doesn't do it.
It doesn't do it for the floor vents or the ones on the dash in the middle there.
Yeah.
It doesn't do it.
Yeah.
What you don't realize is that when you put the defroster on, you are turning on the air conditioner.
Aha.
Aha.
Well, let me just tell you one more thing that happened a couple of weeks ago.
Mm. I'm satisfied just getting this far.
My air conditioner lost its charge.
Yeah.
So the compressor's engaging, but no more cold air is coming out. And I don't know if this is related.
Yeah, it is.
It is.
It is. What you are hearing is the slow and soon to be painful death of the air conditioner compressor.
Oh, excellent.
Just what you wanted to hear.
I wanted you to tell me there was a mean Frenchman living in my...
No, I think what you're hearing is the air conditioner compressor trying to work.
Really?
But it's probably lost not only its Freon, but maybe its oil. So you're hearing the thing, or maybe it's just lost its oil. Who knows?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you can sort of confirm this by next time it happens, open up the hood.
Mm-hmm.
You know where that is, that thing out front.
The thing in the front.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the Pentagon on it.
And you know where the air conditioner compressor
yes,
is.
I
There's
do.
A belt
yep.
wrapped around it.
Yep.
And when it's making the noise, if you put your ear near it, make sure you're not wearing a necktie that will fall down in the fan, you'll hear the noise
and that's
loud and clear.
Uh-huh.
Actually, if you want to try something even more scientific...
Mm-hmm.
You can find there is a wire that connects to the air conditioner clutch. It's the only wire that connects to the compressor at all.
Oh, okay. I know.
Pull it off.
You can pull that off.
If the sound immediately goes away, you're in Fat City.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you're dead. You're not in Fat City. You know what's wrong.
That's right.
And it's going to cost you a bundle.
Promise?
Promise. But I think you need a compressor. Good luck, Sean.
Okay, thanks, guys.
All right, see
bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Dara calling from a glass studio in Prescott, Arizona.
Dara.
Calling from what?
A glass studio.
Yeah.
So you guys sculpt in glass? Is that what you do?
Yeah, and I make glass beads, and also... I make figures.
Really?
Glass artistic figures, yeah.
Like what kind of figures? You mean like...
Well, like we do trees and stars for the holidays.
Well, we were thinking of doing porcelain miniatures of Click and Clack. Could you do them in glass?
Well, if you send me a picture, we'll see what we can do.
Well, we were hoping you'd use your imagination.
Yeah, and might come up with something better.
So, well, Dora, what's up?
Well, here's what's up. I just got a Subaru. It's wonderful. I love it. It's a little Subaru four-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
And most recently, on a trip to Texas with a friend, it started making a sort of clicking noise. And I could sort of trick it into not making it. It started in about second gear, and it would hang in there till about midway through third gear.
And you could trick it by taking your foot off the gas a little bit, right?
Yeah, by either sort of, if I felt like it was coming up, I'd sort of back off of it, and then when I felt like we were at the speed where I could, I'd sort of blast through it pretty rapidly.
Yeah, ha. Cool.
There's another noise, too, just so you know, that's I think might be more serious, but I have two noises.
Give us all the noises.
Okay, the second noise happened when we got all the way back to Arizona. We're driving along the highway. We're in the middle of God knows nowhere, and all of a sudden, it starts... And we're looking at each other thinking it's a drone in the music, you know? So I turn off the radio, and I turn off the fan, the heater, because it was nighttime.
Yeah.
And it kept going, and I get off, I'm getting ready to exit, and the noise goes away. I say, hey, that's good enough for me.
Any idea where it's coming from? Front, back, top, bottom, side?
It sounded like it was under the dash.
Like right behind the dash?
Kind of, yeah, and forward a little bit.
Like under the engine compartment?
Kind of in there somewhere.
In there somewhere.
Yeah.
I kind of thought it might have been the fan and it went away because of that. But since then, it hasn't happened again.
Well, the fan is the most likely candidate.
But you know what? It didn't stop right when I turned off the fan. It stopped, I don't know, a pretty, you know, like it would have been a very slow wind down.
Oh, later. Like it was minutes later?
When I saw the exit ramp up ahead,
I turned off the fan. No, it would have stopped within seconds.
When we got to the exit ramp, maybe three quarters of a mile later, it stopped.
And when it stopped, did it stop abruptly or did it go?
Abruptly, I think. I think it was abrupt.
It was just there 1 second and gone the next.
Right, yeah. Do we have our choice as to which question?
Now, which noise would you like us to think about?
Both.
We can't do both.
It's doing both. Come on, guys.
Dora, we can't do both.
Sure,
I mean, as you know, you had to pay $50 to get an answer. Now, can you afford $100 for two answers?
Well, send me your pictures.
Oh, okay. And you'll do that.
And you can send a check.
The Barbie
with
and
those.
Ken, Tom and Ray glass things.
Yeah. Glass miniatures.
All right. Let's go back to the first one.
Okay.
The first one is relatively easy. The car was pinging.
Oh.
And it's pinging because you were driving with the wrong octane gas, or you're driving under extreme load, or the timing is off, or more likely, you have a lazy or a sticking EGR valve.
Oh.
The other noise sounds remarkably like, obviously it sounded to us like the blower motor, but it obviously isn't that.
Okay.
But it could have been a stuck caliper.
Okay.
That could make that noise.
Is that the wheel caliper?
Yeah,
that's the brake caliper. It could be it could have been a stuck emergency brake. Why it hasn't done it again on a trip? You may have to drive it the same distance to get it to do it. You may have to drive for a few hours.
You may have to go back to Texas.
No.
No, not if you don't have to.
I loved it. It was great. I'll go back again, but not right now.
But you might want to have your mechanic, if you have one, check to see if it has a stuck caliper, because that has the potential to be dangerous.
And then for the pinging?
The pinging, I wouldn't do much of anything, although you might want to check to see if the EGR valve is operating or if there still is one.
Should I treat it to good gas? Will that make a difference?
Well, higher octane gas might diminish the pinging. I mean, if it's going to cost you $200 to replace the EGR valve, you may just want to use the next level up octane.
Okay. Guys, thank you so much.
See you, Dora.
Bye-bye.
Hey, good luck.
All right.
Wow.
Okay, Tommy, time to test that steel trap mind of yours. Do you remember anything about last week's puzzler?
Did it have something to do with workplace misunderstandings, moments of terror, and unexplained backfiring? That's what's coming to me, man.
Well, you're close. That was the whoopee cushion we slipped under Bugsy before the show.
Oh.
But you're not that far off. The puzzler was about backfiring, but a different kind, and I'll have the details in just a minute.
Drive it like it's stolen and it turned into a barbecue. Yeah, we're driving like it's stolen and it turned into a barbecue. Don't read the insurance, but it wasn't nothing they could do. Manifold destiny, give me some gasoline. Manifold destiny, fill it up with that gasoline. Manifold destiny, got it on into the ground.
And even though identity thieves immediately return everything they stole from us whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
Support for the Car Talk podcast and the following message come from Colette Travel. On their small group explorations tours, you'll go deeper into a destination with an average of 15 travelers. Stay in a Tuscan villa or embark on an African safari. Combined with Colette's industry-leading tour managers, authentic cuisine, and 102 years of guided travel expertise, you can trust that the perfect travel experience is here for you. Visit Colette.com or call 855-212-2045.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the Walton Family Foundation, where opportunity takes root. More information is available at waltonfamilyfoundation.org.
This week on Ask Me Another, we challenge singer Paula Cole to a game about birds, but not before she quizzes us. Morning Dove.
Yes.
Yeah. This and more on NPR's Ask Me Another. Listen now.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, but first, the answer to last week's puzzler.
Firsta instead of anda.
Firsta.
Firsta.
This one was from the early days of aviation. Is it coming back to you now?
No.
You see yourself with a scarf wrapped around your neck?
I can.
A leather helmet?
I used to have one of those.
You're playing football with Newt Rockne.
Oh, the DC-3. The pilot.
Yeah.
Close Slovenia.
That was 2 weeks ago.
Oh, darn.
Once upon a time, aircraft mechanics were confused. Early aircraft mechanics were confused because the airplane engine seemed to backfire through the carburetor with some kind of regularity. And this would cause damage to the carburetors, or at the very least would require the mechanics to do extra maintenance. Well, they began investigating, figuring there was something wrong. And after thorough investigations, ruminations, recalibrations, and the like, they discovered that the cause of the backfiring was the pilot. And in fact, the pilots were doing it on purpose. The question is...
like Tony used to do when he went through the tunnel.
Why would a pilot want the engine to backfire through the carburetor, thus scaring the pants off himself when it seemed, in the estimation of the mechanics, to have no useful purpose?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, back in the early days, before they had figured out this phenomenon, when pilots flew under damp and cool conditions, the carburetors would ice up. Exactly.
And they would make it backfire to blow the ice out.
To blow the ice out.
Blow it out your carburetor, as they
say. So to speak. Blow the ice out, baby. And they would either lean out the mixture or advance the timing or do whatever it took to get the thing to pop back through the carburetor, thus expelling the ice, which, if it were allowed to build up, would eventually stall the engine.
And that would be not good.
That would be not good. And, of course, the same thing happens to automobiles. It can't happen to automobiles.
Yeah.
And cars have some crude little device which prevents this. And, of course, airplane engines don't really have carburetors anymore, but that's why they did it. So who's our winner this week?
The winner is Ginger Culbertson from Greenville, South Carolina. And for having her answer selected at random from the truckloads of correct answers that we got, Ginger is going to get, are you ready for this, Ginger? A $25 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at cartalk.com. And with that $25 gift certificate, what can she get, you might say?
You might ask. What can she get?
She can buy a copy of one of our CDs, either the Disrespectful Car Songs collection or the collection of classics called The Hatchback of Notre Dame. Did you know there's actually a call from outer space on that CD?
Not counting Dave from Bemidji, you mean?
Anyway, all right, there's two calls from outer space.
We'll have a brand new puzzler coming up in the third half of the show today, so hold on to your easy chair. In the meantime, you can call us at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good.
Great.
This is John in Cincinnati.
With an H?
Of course.
Cincinnati with an H. C-I-N. Oh, if you say
that's so. Cincinnati.
Yes.
What's going on, man?
I have a 89 Toyota Corolla with 206,000 miles on it.
Good for you.
It's a great car. I was changing the oil about 2 weeks ago, and everything went fine, no sweat. I'm driving to work the next day, and clouds of black smoke are coming out from under the hood. So I pull over, and I noticed that I forgot to put the oil cap back on. So the inside of my engine is then covered with nice, clean oil that's billowing smoke everywhere.
Yeah, well, at least it won't rust.
Well, exactly. Well, that kind of gets to my question, I guess. So I put the cap back on, and I kept driving to work, and eventually all the oil has pretty much burned off by now, I guess. I get a whiff every once in a while. My question is, do I need to do anything to clean out the inside of the engine or any of the belts or any of that kind of stuff, or should I just let it go?
Well, it's unlikely that very much of the oil got onto the belts because the oil filler cap is on the valve cover on this car.
There was oil pretty much everywhere.
It was, huh?
Yeah,
yeah,
there was
probably
a lot. In the parking lot at work, I parked it far away, so all of the oil dripping wouldn't be anywhere near the window to my office.
Sneaky guy. Well, you may want to go to one of those do-it-yourself car washes.
Yeah.
And at the very least, do the area where the belts are, you know, the pulleys and the belts.
What, just open it up and squirt it out?
There you go.
Well,
really?
You might want to even invest and have it steam cleaned. That's what I would do. Wouldn't you? I mean,
it's got 209,000 miles on it.
Well, I'm going for 300.
He's going for 300, though.
Here's what I would do instead. I would go to your local parts store.
No, don't buy that stuff.
and buy a spray can of Engine Bright.
No.
And you spray this stuff
is
on
it. Is it like spray paint?
No. And you buy this stuff, and it's a solvent, basically. It's like easy off oven cleaner.
Yeah, but all the stuff is going to fall on the street.
No. He's going to do it at the car wash.
Oh, he is.
Because they have a grease trap there. So you could spray this stuff on at the car wash thing and then turn the thing on to soap. And with the engine, the directions on the can tell you what to do. And then with the engine running, I would do it with the engine running, you hose the thing off. I mean, alternatively, you could leave all the oil on there because it is a good rust preventer.
Well, and it makes the engine look nice and, you know, nice and broken in.
Yeah, it does.
Certainly does.
I would clean it off. It'll make it easier for you to work on it, or whoever works on it will appreciate it.
Okay.
So, but you could do it with just that wand at the do-it-yourself car wash, and you could use the soap. But I would avoid spraying it directly into the alternator. I would avoid definitely spraying it directly onto the distributor because it'll conk out and you'll have to abandon the car.
Oh, well, that can't happen.
And
but everything else can take it.
Okay.
Good luck.
All right, thanks.
See you, John.
Bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Janet calling from Gustavus, Alaska.
Janet from who?
From where?
From Gustavus, Alaska.
Gustavus?
G-U-S.
T-A-V-U-S.
Gustavus.
Gustavus.
Gustavus?
Gustavus, Alaska. Not that it matters because it's Alaska, but what edge of Alaska is it? Middle, left end, right end, bottom end?
Yeah, when you fall off the edge, where can we tell your parents to send the search
where
party?
Where would they go looking for you?
The southeastern edge, near Juneau.
Southeastern edge.
Oh, this is the warm part of Alaska.
Oh, it's tropical, yep.
So what's cooking, Janet?
Well, I live in a really small town. It's about 300 people. And it's really common that when we see friends driving down the road that we want to stop and talk with, that you'll just pull your vehicle up alongside your friend's vehicle, and you often right in the middle of the road, and you start chatting away. And we've been wondering, kind of the whole town's been wondering, if you're just stopped for a short period of time, is it better to turn the engine off or to leave it running?
What do you mean by better?
Well, is it better for the car, for the engine, or is it better for the environment to turn it off? Does it burn more gas?
Yeah, well, they do burn more gas when they're running. We've established that in the lab. That's why they recommend you turn the car off at night. But
my father, who lives there near your fair city, Cambridge.
Does he?
He thought he had the answer for me.
What's his answer?
His answer, well, he said that it has to do with whether the vehicle is old or new.
He's right.
He's right about that.
What typically happened in cars of yesteryear is when you turned the thing off, almost all carburetors used to flood over a little bit and pour gasoline into the manifold that wasn't really ever going to be used, and at least to move the vehicle. And usually on restart, the thing would run a little rough.
Blow
a little black smoke, exactly, and burn off that extra gas, which was a terrible waste.
Right, so most vehicles in Gustavus would fall into that category of being pretty old.
Of being pretty old.
How old is pretty old?
Well, mine's one of the newer ones around. Probably it's a 1989.
Oh, so you want to keep yours running.
So many of them are, in fact, carbureted.
Yeah, there are a fair number of 70s vehicles running around town or, you know, from the 80s.
Yeah, I would say unless
you're gonna... Okay, I got my number.
I'm writing it down on this little piece of... Wait a minute.
If you were going to be stopped for more than... X.
Correct. I want to know that X time.
Now, here's my number.
Whoa.
Five minutes.
I got 3 minutes.
4 minutes.
4 minutes. Yeah.
Now, is that you're just considering the gas that you would burn, or is that also to wear and tear on the starter, on the battery?
We put all
the factors in.
We just use integral calculus to factor in all the important data, and we consider that if it's less than 4 minutes, leave it running. If it's going to be more than 4 minutes, if you run into a girlfriend, you got to just shut it right off.
Oh, someone else is going to get into trouble besides me.
Well,
what do you think
it's
about?
Just an observation that women can talk. Guys see each other.
How you doing?
What do they say?
Pretty good.
Oh, how's it hanging? And they're on their way. And that's pretty much it. You got a moose night. And okay, talk to you next week. But women can talk for hours.
Well, you see, though, in Gustavus, people are often stopped talking about building projects. And you know how guys like to talk about building.
Well,
everybody's always building things around here. It's a big construction zone. So.
Oh, yeah? Well, what are you building for? What's the end goal here?
Oh, people are building cabins and saunas and sheds. Everybody's got to have sheds. You know, you need a shed.
But there's no, like, commercial construction going on. Like, no, the Four Seasons Hotel is not operating up there yet.
No, thank God. So if...
Yeah, it's got the one season hotel.
Winter.
Yeah. We give every guest a pair of long underwear.
So if it's an old vehicle and you're stopped for more than 4 minutes,
yeah. Shut it off. Yeah. But no, there are other factors to consider. You know, if it's minus 20 degrees, you're going to be freezing after about 3 minutes, especially with the window open.
Right.
We didn't put that into the calculation. Our calculation, which we did independently, but we know how we think. It involved the use of fuel, emissions that were going to come out of the car, the cost of the battery and starting it up, the cost of buying a new starter.
But we also assumed an ambient temperature of 55 degrees.
Actually, that's about right. It's a pretty mild place.
Well, if it's pretty mild, then I would shut the thing off if it's going to be 4 minutes or more.
Okay.
That's my recommendation. I'm sure we'll get 5,000 emails to support many other theses.
I see.
And this is for carbureted cars, which is what you guys have there.
Yeah.
Right.
See, the new cars, they don't use up extra fuel. When you shut it off, it shuts off.
The injectors just stop.
And when you start it up, it doesn't take more fuel to start it up than it takes to run.
Okay.
And if it's really cold, you can just talk to each other on your cell phones and leave the windows closed.
We don't have cell phones here.
I didn't think so. See you, Janet.
At least most people don't.
Thank
you
very
much.
Thanks, Janet.
Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK.
Those are the kinds of things you have to think about when you live in Gustavus.
Yeah. I would pronounce it Gustavus.
Yeah, Gustav.
Gustav, right.
Gustav, tell us. All other women are jealous.
No, that was Alma tell us. Gustav said, this is the Fräulein I must have. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. This is Kendall calling from Lafayette, Louisiana.
Kendall.
Hi, yeah. I have a 92 Mazda Protege, and for the last couple of years, it seems like the headlights have been getting progressively dimmer. It's been pretty gradual, but my passengers notice it a lot. The alternator, the battery checkout, you know, I've replaced the headlights.
You replaced the headlight bulbs?
The bulbs, yes.
This car has halogen bulbs that plug into the back.
Correct.
Of the headlight.
Yes.
And they cost $25 a piece.
Well, not quite, but they're not cheap.
How do you know that the headlights are dimmer?
At first, I didn't notice because it was so gradual. But I noticed a lot of my passengers would insist that I didn't have my headlights on, that it was just way too dim in front of the car.
Did you notice they're holding on to the dashboard while you were driving?
Yeah, there's a lot of praying. Some rosaries get produced. And then in the last year or so, you know, I've noticed that when I'll rent a rental car and drive a car with good headlights and then go back to my car, I realize these are really insufficient.
When was your last accident?
I was rear-ended about 4 years ago, but it wasn't very serious.
Rear-ended?
Yes.
Well, I think you need a good front-end accident.
Okay. I'll see what I can do. I'm bound to have one at this rate.
Yeah, exactly.
How bad is the rust on this car?
It's not there is none.
All right. Here's
giving us lousy answers. I think I know.
But I won't let that stop me.
No, I think you should jump right in because we know what it is. It can only be one of two things.
Okay.
One of them is there's a bad ground, and the other one is that you're nuts.
Oh, no, I have two other answers.
You have two more. There are four possible things. Go ahead. What are your two?
One is that the headlights, believe it or not, are misaligned.
Okay.
And if your headlights, for example, are pointing down at the ground, it's pretty tough to see where you're going.
I eliminated that possibility because I assumed, and this may be wrong, that Louisiana has an inspection at which time they check the headlight.
No, actually, that's correct. And I've checked them myself and tried adjusting them and have received small benefits from that. But
okay, then here's my fallback position.
Cool,
okay.
Man.
You know, fallback, spring ahead. Did we just do that?
Yeah.
You have over 100,000 miles in this thing.
Yes.
And the headlights, which are plastic,
mm-hmm.
are all scratched.
Scratched. I like that one.
Because remember the old days when you had a headlight that was made out of glass and the headlight blew? You went and replaced the entire thing. It was called a sealed beam. Right. And you would take out this thing that weighed about 22 pounds, and you would throw it away, and you'd plug another one in.
It only cost $3, though.
And it cost $3. And in doing so, you would get a new filament, which allowed the light to work, but you'd also get...
new lenses.
Now, your headlight blows out, you plug in that $15 bulb in the back, but the piece of plastic in the front through which the light has to shine doesn't ever get replaced unless you have an accident.
You'd be surprised at what a difference it makes to replace that lens. Go buy a new lens, buy two, but right. Put one of them in, and then turn on the headlights, and I think you'll see a fantastic difference.
Yeah, you'll only be able to buy one at a time because they're like $1,000 a piece.
But... and if you don't see a fantastic difference...
don't buy the other one.
don't buy the other one and start looking for a bad ground.
But we see this a lot in cars. And it's unfortunate that, and in some cars, those stupid things do cost many hundreds of dollars.
Right. Well, thanks a lot, guys. That sounds like you're really onto something. I'm going to give it a try.
Yeah, well, we try.
The best of luck to you, Kendall.
See you, man.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right. Before we get to the new puzzler, we're going to pause and take a short break.
Yeah, and when we come back, we'll have sports, the lottery number, news you can use, and my brother will dress up as the weather girl.
I thought it was your turn to dress up as the weather girl. I do it every week. We'll be right back.
And even though Nanook of the North goes online and orders a pair of noise-canceling earmuffs whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Kay Buxbaum in support of the David Gilkey and Zabiula Tamana Memorial Fund, established to strengthen NPR's commitment to training and protecting journalists in high-risk environments.
Hey, it's me again. Remember that as the year draws to a close, your station is hoping and waiting for your pledge. In fact, the development director has been pacing so much, we're concerned he's going to wear through the floor and end up in the used Cabbage Patch doll store downstairs. Well, at least it'll be a soft landing. Your gift now at the end of the year will really help your station. It'll help them keep the news, music, interviews, and great companionship coming through the next year. In this season of appreciation, take a minute to go online and donate. Go to donate.npr.org/cartalk. That's donate.npr.org/cartalk. Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler.
Yes.
This came rather recently from a fellow named Josh Kokendolfer, and he says, this is a true story.
Ah.
Of course, because it was a true story, I had to what?
Obfuscate it.
Exactly. Are you ready?
Sure.
It was a brisk December morning. A co-worker and I had a simple job to do that day, clean out the job site and take the trash to the local landfill, okay? And we had an F-350 pickup that was outfitted with a dump truck bed, you know?
Yeah.
And we filled it up and headed out. When we arrived at the landfill, we pulled the truck onto the scale that weighed our vehicle. And the landfill lady waved us through. Okay, so they weigh your truck and they wave you through.
Yeah.
We unloaded and headed back out to the scale. Once again, our truck was weighed. Okay. I informed the madame of the landfill that we would return in a few hours with a second load. And she grunted at me as I headed back to the truck. Now, you get this. You go in with a full truck.
Yeah,
they weigh it. Okay. And then when you leave, they weigh your empty truck. Yeah. And the difference is what...
What you dumped.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, before getting into the truck, I noticed that one of the back tires was low. Oh. I decided to stop at one of the local gas stations to check it out and fill all the tires just in case.
Oh.
Well, after lunch, we loaded the truck a second time at the site and headed back to the landfill. Everything went just like the first time. After we were weighed on exiting, I went to pay the bill.
Yeah.
As the lady stamped paid on my bill, I headed back to the truck and I kind of tossed the paperwork inside. And my co-worker looked at it and he noticed something strange. The first time we left, we weighed 6,480 pounds. And the second time we exited, we weighed 6,440 pounds, a difference of 40 pounds. We were being charged for an extra 40 pounds of trash that we didn't have. I immediately stormed into the office to complain and explained the situation. She grinned and said, "There's nothing wrong with our scales."
Yeah.
Well, if that's the case, what happened? Now, if you think you know the answer.
Well, just repeat it so we get it straight. The first time, how much did the empty truck weigh?
The first time, the empty truck weighed 6,480 pounds.
Yeah. And the second time?
The second time, it weighed 6,440 pounds.
Yeah.
A difference of 40 pounds.
So they were charging you for 40 pounds.
Right. The truck weighed less.
Yeah.
Right? So there's got to be something wrong with the scale. How can it weigh less?
How can it weigh less?
It's empty.
Yeah.
Right? If you had forgotten to dump something, you'd think it would weigh more.
Yeah.
But in fact, it weighed less. And they went to complain, and the landfill lady said,
"There's nothing wrong with
there's nothing wrong with our scales." So the question is, what's happening? Now, if you think you know the answer, carve it into the underside of a John Boos American Heritage Collection harvest table, butcher block kitchen workstation made from 4-inch thick solid end grain northern hard rock maple, 2 slatted lower shelves, and send it along with a vise and a table-mountable radial arm saw. So we can use this thing in the workshop, of course, to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
But if you have a car question for us right now, we're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Heidi Haugen. I'm calling from Ithaca, New York.
Hi, Heidi. That's a nice name, isn't it? Are you a little goody two-shoes, as your name would imply?
Oh, sometimes.
Or are you a wild, crazy woman?
Sometimes that, too.
So what's up, Heidi?
Well, I've got a 1986 Lincoln Town Car, and it's got a non-automotive problem.
Oh.
Really?
Yeah, it's more of a social problem.
I can see that already, too. I can see your friends don't think you should be driving it.
Well, that's a good guess, but it's not quite it. It's the car itself that has a social problem.
Oh, the car does.
Oh, it does. Uh-huh. It has a flatulence problem?
No. It's not very good friends with a bird in my backyard.
Huh?
There's a male robin that pecks at it every morning and every evening.
No kidding.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a ground feeder, and it hops around the backyard looking for worms and bugs and stuff and protects its territory. And then it comes over to the car, and it sees another robin in the lower chrome panel, you know, on the side of the car.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and it attacks the bird that it sees.
It's trying to give it a little peck on the cheek.
Yeah, and darned if the other robin in the chrome panel doesn't attack back right at the very same time.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
How convenient.
So this robin keeps attacking the other bird and my car for hours on end.
No kidding.
My question is...
So you have a million little dents in that...
Actually, it doesn't really make any dents, or at least I haven't seen any, because it's just a tiny little bird, but at the same time, it's beating its brains out. And my dad figures I have two choices, either sell the car or shoot the bird.
Well, I think... No, I don't think that isn't a choice. You can drop a cement block on him.
So
the Audubon Society's going to love you. Well, I mean, you could paint the car. I mean, this is interesting.
No, it's only that chrome piece that's right on the very bottom.
The rocker panel.
Yeah, the rocker. Well, not even the rocker panel. It's about a quarter of the door, isn't it?
Right. It's sort of at the very bottom, and it points down.
Right. So the bird looks up and says, "Hey, you."
Yeah.
Peck, 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 peck.
Exactly.
Gee, we heard recently of a horse that ate a Subaru.
It was a Tercel, but it...
Whatever.
It didn't quite eat it. It ate the paint.
It ate the paint.
Yeah.
Maybe there's some big conspiracy going on. Maybe animals are...
Rebelling
against all the cars. I mean, don't forget, cars have really taken over.
Right.
That could be.
Michael Crichton will be on this in the morning.
I mean, you could see why the horse would be particularly upset. I mean, his whole status... the status of the horse has been greatly diminished by the
automobile.
The onset of the automobile.
So the horse is a particular axe to grind, so to speak, against the car.
Now the bird.
And to add insult to injury, the person who told us that story had actually driven onto the horse's domain.
Exactly.
The range.
See, sure. Protecting its territory.
Protecting its turf, so to speak.
Yeah. Right.
So now there might be some of this going on. Where's Alfred Hitchcock when you really need him?
We could discuss all kinds of remedies, but I think you should brick him.
It's only this one bird, huh?
Yeah, it's just the one bird. Well, you know, that is his territory. It's definitely a male. It's got, the nice red or rust-colored breast.
But I know what you need.
Yeah?
You need to get some of those refrigerator magnet things, which are cats.
Oh, well, they're pretty small. You really think that's going to work?
Jeez, I don't know. Well, birds are pretty small. Maybe I don't know, but it's certainly worth a shot.
Worth a try. Are there other
Well, it won't stick to those things because those things are aluminum, I believe.
Aluminium. I think they're aluminium.
They may be aluminium, too.
Well, you can use contact paper. That would enhance the look of this vehicle anyway.
Well,
contact paper with pictures of cats on it. I mean, is this bird particularly stupid?
Well, it could be. It is a young one.
It's a young one.
Well, I mean, you can try scaring him away. You could obviously try.
Well, I have done a little bit of that. Coming out and yelling, but the next, in the next 15 minutes, it'll be there.
He's back again.
Brick him.
No, he's not doing any harm, and he'll grow out of it. If he's a young bird, as you say, he'll grow out of it. Sure.
All right. Well,
I wouldn't worry about it.
See.
We bought an owl, a plastic owl that we put on our kitchen counter because
now there's an idea.
Because our cat had the nasty habit of jumping up on the kitchen counter, which some people think is quaint, but I don't like it particularly when my cat puts his butt on the place where I prepare my food.
Yeah.
So whenever I scar him on the kitchen counter, I would gently pick him up.
Besides, you usually sit there, as I recall.
Naked. Buck naked. But I would pick him up and gently throw him out the second floor window.
Gently.
But he didn't get the hint, but so we bought the owl.
No kidding. The owl scared
him away until he figured out
that the owl was dead.
The owl was a fake.
Yeah.
Hmm. And he knocked I'd have to keep moving it around.
He knocked it off the counter one day.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. But that last time I threw him out the window, that cured him. He never came back.
Cured a lot of things, I'll bet.
Yeah, no, we can't say. I mean, as much fun as it might be to brick him, we obviously can't suggest that for obvious reasons. But I wonder what it would look like.
Well, how did it look when you bricked the cat? Heidi, thanks for bringing this little bit of levity into our lives. Good luck.
Try the cats.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Steve from Concord, New Hampshire.
Steve.
Steve, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Not too bad. How's everything up there in the live free and die young state?
Oh, it's great. Live, freeze, and die is what we call it in
live,
the winter
freeze,
time.
And die.
Oh, freeze. Live, freeze, and die.
Yeah.
Not necessarily in that order.
Not necessarily.
What's up?
I've got a 1995 Dodge 3500 Ram pickup truck. Extra cab, dually, four-wheel drive. When I'm heading down the highway, going somewhere between 55 and 65, and the first time it happened with the cruise control on. I hit a bump, and typically it's the kind of bump that's, the expansion joint in a bridge.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
The rear end strikes it so that usually they're running at kind of an angle to the road, so one tire will catch it just ahead of the, one of the dualies will catch it ahead of the other one.
And it turns off the cruise control.
Yeah. Well, actually, I did that the first time it happened because I thought I was going to die. The rear end started hopping. I mean, this thing was like, when somebody's really good at dribbling a basketball, gets it down close to the floor, and it starts bouncing really fast?
Yeah.
It was just basketballing down the road, and I thought,
you felt as though you were actually losing control.
Yeah, I thought I was going to completely lose my life is what I thought was
happening. Was the control restored when you killed the cruise control?
Well, I killed the cruise control, and no, that did not. So then I immediately shifted it into neutral. It's an automatic, and it's still doing it. So I put on the signal, get off to the side of the road, and when I get it down below 45, it stops.
Yeah.
It's happened 5 times since, and the first 3 times were with the cruise control on, so I thought it was a cruise control problem.
I don't think so.
But the last 3 times, it's happened, and even at slower speeds, as slow as 55. Mm-hmm. So I have no idea what this is. I mentioned it to the Dodge guys, and they had no idea. They looked at the shocks, said the shocks weren't blown. I don't know how they do that visually, but there's no oil leaking that
I can see. The shocks probably aren't blown. Does this thing have limited slip rear differential?
That would be my guess. It's definitely, it's four-wheel drive, and it's dual rear tires and one-ton suspension. I would sort of assume it's got limited slip.
What the hell are you doing with this thing? You hauling, like, beef cattle around?
It's my work truck. I'm a builder.
You're a builder. Don't these home centers, like, deliver the stuff?
Well, they do sometimes, but you can never trust that they're going to pick out the good stuff.
And then you have to bring it back. So
then you
got to
bring it
back,
and you lose time.
So.
And besides, how can you pick up all those bricks by the side of the road?
this is true.
Right. It does prevent you stealing stuff if you don't have the
Home
truck.
Home Depot ain't going to do that.
By the way, deliver the stuff. Pick up those 20 sheets of plywood that they're using to build a new McDonald's with.
Yeah. It makes you look real professional when you lose a load of material down the side of the highway and you feel like an idiot when you pull over to pick it up. So.
Yeah, just keep driving.
Right.
Yeah.
So you guys
face.
Are my only hope. Now,
well, I have every belief that it has something to do with the limited slip differential, if in fact you have that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It sounds like the kind of thing where the limited slip differential is getting confused by the fact that the wheels won't stay on the ground.
Ah.
And I think it's something you're not going to fix.
Okay.
And I bet you it's not as much of a problem when you have that load of stolen bricks on the truck.
It's never happened when I've been loaded down. It's typically
right.
When I've got, stolen bricks.
The thing is, when you have the stolen bricks on there, you have the vehicle in its most comfortable configuration, so
right.
to speak.
That's when it rides the best, when it's loaded.
Yeah, and when you don't have it loaded, and the thing is so heavily sprung
mm-hmm.
that when you hit a bump, one wheel comes off the ground, it hits, it comes off again, and you're confusing the limited slip differential, and the thing starts to do this jockeying.
Wow, well, that jockeying or basketballing is about as close as you could call it, yeah.
Well, you know, one thing that I thought of was that overinflated tires could cause this same thing, too.
Uh-huh.
It could exacerbate
right.
it.
Right, the treads are like down to the point where I need to replace them on all six.
Well, and that might do it too. Don't forget, when the thing is lifting up off the ground and it's hitting, it's not grabbing correctly because you have no tread.
Right.
I would get the tires. I would go to whatever the specification is for the manufacturer for pressure. And if that doesn't seem to alleviate it, you might want to drop down a couple of pounds in the
okay.
rear.
Now, if the limited slip is getting confused, like you say, is that a mechanical problem that can be fixed, or is that
no.
just something it's going to do?
No, it's something it's going to do, and it's caused by the fact that the thing is made to be loaded.
Okay, could the shocks be part of it?
Yes.
Okay.
The guys who said the shocks are not blown, that may well be true, but that doesn't mean they're any good.
Okay.
Well, with the tires. You've got to do that first anyway.
Yeah.
Do the tires and call us in the morning. Take
right.
six tires and call us in the morning.
All right, so I'll get six tires and call you in the morning then.
All right, Steve.
Yeah, and I think you're going to right away need the shocks as well. Have
okay.
someone check the shocks, not
right.
just look to see if they're leaking.
Okay.
See you, Steve.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Take
good
care.
Luck.
Well, it's happened again. You've blown off another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk.
I wasn't listening.
I noticed. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, bongo boy, frogman, pumpkin lips, cute, 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 Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Bridgeford. Our theme music is by David Dog Grisman, and our technical spiritual and menu advisor, just back from the Vale Ale, Kale, Snail, Quail, and Lobster Tail Lunch Pail, is John Bugsy Lawler.
Where is he?
He just walked in the door! Just in time.
For what? Lunch.
Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Marge Novera. Our customer care representative is Hey Would You Buzz Off. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our empathy counselor is Howard Juno. Our director of top secret strategy is Donatello Nobody. Our tolerance quality control guy is Nat Sass. Our employee relations coordinator is Malcolm Tense. Our chicken soup provisioner is Kent Hoyt. Our Russian chauffeur is Pekoff and Dropoff. And our seat cushion tester is Mike Easter. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Louis Dewey, known to the caroling pickpockets in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and don't drive like my brother.
Oh, one other thing.
Yes.
Don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1949, subscribe to our weekly podcast, and check out our guaranteed-to-be-regifted clothing and best-of collections all over at cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, we tell you how to get in one more tax deduction before the end of the year.
You're not still trying to claim our producers as dependents, are you?
No. I write them off as gambling losses. I'm talking about donating a car.
Oh, yeah. You know, by donating your car to this station instead of trading it in, you can help support your favorite public radio programs, nail down a deduction for next April, and stop my brother from snooping around your driveway at night.
I was just looking.
To find out how to donate your car, check out the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey Cheatham and Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though levitating yogis fall out of the air whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.